Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
And ladies and gentlemen, from high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge everywhere, enriching mankind with every nanosecond this broadcast continues. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, my friends, across the broadcast spectrum and continuum, preparing these headlines about a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to:
thousands of pantless Portlanders take part in Naked Bike Ride. Portland celebrates the 40th anniversary of the Pride Parade. And a family escapes after their SUV rolls into the water in Sovey Island.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. I give you Legion of News on PDX.fm.
Thousands of Portlanders swarmed downtown Portland this weekend, semi-naked, slathered in body paint, and riding their bicycle under the Hawthorne Bridge. I'm doing excellently right out of the gate, aren't I?
Well done. Yeah. We'll fix it in post. No, I guess that's not possible.
That's not going to work.
We're not going to be fixing anything anywhere. Now that we've done
a whole lot of people rode their bikes naked this weekend.
No, but here's the other thing: now that we have done our huge bombastic, whiter than white, 99.44, 100% pure intro here. I should say that, again, my name is Rick Emerson, this is Don Taylor, and you are listening to Legion of News, which is being broadcast to you and encircling planet Earth like a big encircling thing, courtesy of PDX.fm. So before we do anything else, I think from in future broadcasts, never mind.
Yeah.
We will probably have a little bit more of a stock introduction where we plunge right into the news. But because this is the first time that we're broadcasting, the first time that I've been back on the air really in any sort of a regular gig since, not that I'm dwelling on it, October 23rd, 2009, when they fired me at around 3:22 in the afternoon. I should say that, first of all, we want to thank Robert Wagner and everybody at PDX.fm for helping to bring this mellifluous voice to you, my friends. Robert and I had talked off and on about a few things, and Don has been doing and does a show on Wednesdays at 4 called Ham Fisted Radio. And when the whole KUFO thing imploded, and we'll talk more about this later on today in the Rick Emerson Show. I don't want to get because there is news to be gotten to, but
if I can tell the news without stumbling all over myself,
that's fine. I'm giving you a second to ready yourself and to tie off or whatever it is you need to do over there.
I will say this though too: we changed up the opening like three or four times because we had practiced the opening and I had it down, and then you said you threw this whole thing where we were going to have the voiceover with from the news desk, Don, and then I was doing something else, and then I was waiting for that, and that didn't show up.
Oh, God, were you just talking to me? I'm sorry. Anyway, so just to back up for a moment.
Yes, I was talking to you.
I would say that when the KUFO thing happened, Court and Bobby, Court and Fatboy, they immediately plunged into the online world. Inaccurate news reporting notwithstanding, there was an article that came out last week in a trade magazine that said, you know, the exciting developments in Portland radio. Rick Emerson and Court and Fatboy will all be doing a show together. This will be the first time they'll be broadcasting online. They've all decided to go to the internet on the same day. And so that was inaccurate in like 100 different ways. Those guys really it led the charge in a big way. And so we are happy to, we're happy to be here and happy to be part of PDX FM. I also want to take a moment to thank real quickly here. I'm doing this in reverse order because normally the thanks scroll past the screen at the end, and then Peter Jackson thanks all 90,000 people who are part of the LOTR fan base in Wellington or wherever. But I want to thank our friends Thomas Gill and our good friend Seamus as well, who a lot of you know those guys from online. They helped put together the technical underpinnings of this in a big way, because otherwise I would just be sitting at home. As I think I mentioned to Thomas, I'd just be sitting at home answering myself with a sock puppet. And, don't you wish you were on the radio? Yes, I do, Socko.
By the way, Socko, the Family Values puppet, wrote on the text box here, nice points for the Starship Troopers music.
That's so. What I do. So I want to thank everybody for helping us sort of, you know, get this up and running. And, you know, for helping us, you know, make it the sterling broadcast that it no doubt will be, with more flawless elocution by Don Taylor. One other note before we continue. And again, I know today is a little bit, today and probably a lot of this week is going to be a little bit different from what the regular broadcasts will be. Because I want to note that if you are tuning in for the Rick Emerson Show, that of course will happen later on today. That'll happen at 1 o'clock. You can find out more about that at rickemerson.com. Legion of News is our attempt to cram your brain full of as much information as we possibly can to give you, in short, an overview of everything that your human mind will need to face the horrors of an unrelentingly mediocre and stupid world. And so by making you more intelligent and more enraptured with knowledge and learning in all of its many shades, colors, and varieties, we hope to improve your life exponentially. Would you like me to intro you again, Don?
So let's do this, and then I can I can actually pretend I know what I'm talking
about. We're going to pretend that I've done the whole opening with the theme music, where where our friend Cable says, Legion of News! And I...
Which I think is awesome, by the way.
Well, let's just start it again. Hold on.
It gave me all the shivers
and
such.
No, it's fine. You know what? We'll start it again.
Okay.
All right, hold on. We're just going to pretend that the entire opening, that the last 12 minutes didn't happen. All right, here we go. We're just going to open the show again. Fix it in post.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
My God, what a fantastic introduction. It's almost hard to believe this is the first time we've done it live, that we didn't, in fact, have a take 10 minutes ago in which everything went unbelievably poorly. From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is even now readying a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to...
Thousands of pantless Portlanders take part in Naked Bike Ride.
Well said.
Thank you. Portland celebrates the 40th anniversary of the Pride Parade.
Flawless delivery.
And a family escapes after their SUV rolls into the water in Sovie Island.
Excellent. Well, it's not excellent. Well, I mean, it's excellent that they escaped. I was commenting more on your delivery than anything else. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Legion of News.
This weekend, thousands of naked, partially naked, and covered in hippie symbols Portlanders gathered under the Hawthorne Bridge for the city's 7th annual World Naked Bike Ride. Volunteers estimated the crowd at 13,000, but those on the scene said it was probably more like 5,000. But still, that's a lot of naked people on bikes. The ride is very likely the world's largest naked bike ride in the world. It is networked with World Naked Bike Ride Day, so there are people in cities all across the fine globe doing the naked bike ride thing.
And this happened where? You have to understand, I've been in this small, essentially windowless room the last 6 weeks.
Here in Portland, they started under the Hawthorne Bridge, and then it was a 9-mile route that went through Old Town, Broadway, past all the Southeast Bar area, like 28th Belmont, Hawthorne.
And there's 5,000 people in there riding bicycles naked.
Yes, and the police actually block off streets for them and such. It's ostensibly to raise awareness of how difficult it is to be a biker. I don't know how vulnerable they are.
You have no idea what it's to raise awareness.
I think it's to raise awareness of how vulnerable bike riders are to being hit by cars.
Are you making this up? Is this like a bluff on your part?
No, I went and I looked it up online. I found World Bike Ride Day, and they have some. I
I think this is a little bit of a retcon because haven't they been doing the naked? Didn't the naked bike ride? They did that in England years ago because they put it on the cover of the Queen record on the bicycle race.
That was an actual bicycle race.
Yeah, it was because of a, it was a nude bicycle race, and I think that was actually the inspiration. I think that was actually because it was a dual. That record, it was bicycle race, and the flip side was fat bottom girls, and there was a picture of a naked fat woman on a bicycle, which I believe was taken at a nude bicycle race that they had in London. And I then believe that it migrated over. Now, see, I could be making this up, but I'm never entirely sure. I think it then migrated over to San Francisco. But anyway, the point is, this is one of those things that they are putting a retroactive continuity on when they say, no, it's to raise awareness of something crucial and important, prevention for the cure, blah, 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 blah. Because otherwise you have to admit that it's just a bunch of pasty acres of pink flesh, attention whores who are bouncing their junk up and down on a bicycle seat. And I don't understand how that works. I got two things. One, if you're a man and you're riding the bicycle like that, first of all, I hope you have the gel seat. But also, it seems like that seems awfully
uncomfortable.
It's gonna be compressing the your business there. Yeah. And then right in the store. And if you're a woman,
that's awkward.
There might be a little bit of a, that's not so much a cardboard applicator as it is just like a bicycle applicator.
Plus, there's that whole thing of when your naked skin is on a vinyl or a leather seat and it gets warm and you peel it off.
Yeah.
And being a naked lady and doing that, that could be really not pleasant. And apparently also a number of them, I was going to mention this, but also one of our listeners mentions in the chat box that a lot of them stopped at Cartopia on Hawthorne, where Whiffy Pies is, and stopped for snacks. And I would think that, eating a hot fried pie while you're naked could be dangerous.
It lends itself to all kinds of stories that are only amusing if you're us.
But one person was hit by a car on Hawthorne, but reports from the scene said that the injury wasn't very bad. Sarah Merck, who blogged about it at the Portland Mercury, said, and I'm quoting her blog here, "The only questionable part was the Pervo gauntlet at the beginning of the ride, where a handful of guys set up their zoom lenses along the first part of the route."
It seems like you have two choices. One can either go out and ride a bicycle naked, or one can kvetch about it. You can't do both. You can't complain about guys looking at your bosoms while at the same time you got 5,000 people, let's say a third of them are women. So you got 1,300 people, and as Robert Carradine would say in Revenge of the Nerds, that's 2,600 boobs. So one can either be nude or one can be left alone. One can't be both.
I had a boyfriend many years ago who was a proponent of the nude beach. And took me along with him once.
No.
It was awkward in a lot of ways. One, because I ran into somebody I went to high school with, and that was awkward. But also,
Was it a guidance counselor?
No, it was just
Taylor.
It was just a guy I went to high school with, and then we're both standing there wearing nothing but tennis shoes. I was like, hey.
Did you have you had tennis shoes on?
Well, yeah, it was a rocky beach.
I like
so everyone was wearing shoes.
You're not unnerved by the idea that you might trip and your delicate areas fall onto the rocks, but your feet have to be protected. Did you do that thing where you're talking to him and he's talking to you and you're both naked, and yet you're both pretending that you're not naked? Sort of some weather we're having.
Pretty much. I was so intensely uncomfortable. I just loathed the entire experience. But also, as far as the perv gauntlet, it was down a rocky hillside. And you had to climb down the side of like this cliff. It was in Southern California. And there was this group of Hispanic men who were just sort of sitting on the side of the hill like all afternoon just watching the naked people.
That's cheaper than a movie. Anyway.
The
one thing I have noticed about people, and I should say that, I've never been an attendee at a nude beach. That's not a thing I do. I'm all about being covered. I think we talked about this when I was on Ham-Fisted Radio a while back. As soon as my feet hit the floor, the first thing I do, everybody's got their morning ritual. You make your toast, or you go and you scrape your face, or you go and you perform a bodily function or four. My whole thing is I walk into my home office. And in my home office, I have a walk-in closet where I store all my clothes. And the first thing I do is I just get dressed from my head to my feet. I mean, all the way down to my shoes and my socks. I mean, unless I'm – because I shower at night. I can't shower in the morning. So I cover up all the way because I just can't – And maybe this says more about me. Well, it does, I guess, by definition.
But you do shower, though, Nick.
I'm not a never nude.
You're not a never nude like Tobias Funke.
I'm never nude. I'm not a never nude. I just don't like to be uncovered. Because I guess it is sort of like a strange vulnerability or something. But the idea of just going to a beach, where first of all, it seems like you're going to be encountering the risk of a whole lot of unpleasant burning. Unless you decide just to use like a sun-protecting salve over all of your body, which then puts you in the awkward position of massaging, rubbing lotion on your junk in the presence of other people. And there's no way to not make that. You can say, look, no, it's the sun. I'm like a baby's bottom here. But you're still rubbing lotion into your area, you know? And then that's just... And then it's a no-win situation, because either everybody at the beach is hideous, or there's some really hot girl at the beach, in which case, you know, you have to leave.
Yeah.
Because you just can't be around rubbing lotion on the store with some hot girl there, because then you're going to be in prison.
Okay. Portland celebrated the 40th anniversary of our Pride Parade this weekend. Darcel was the Grand Marshal of the parade, which began near Powell's Books on Burnside. And I like this piece I've got here. Portland Mayor Sam Adams was also on hand.
Is he the steak knives at this point?
And I have a
puppet show and Sam Adams.
And there was also the Waterfront Festival, which had more than 100 booths. And my favorite quote that I found when I was looking for the Pride Parade, someone named Hunter Von Dean said, "It's the most important thing every year. I look forward to this every year.
I have a tiny, empty life into which no sun shines.
I come every year. I march every year. It's very important to get our pride up."
Oh, he's talking about the Pride Parade, not about the Waterfront Festival.
No, he's talking about the Pride Parade.
Oh, I thought he was talking about... Okay, well, never mind then. I rescind half of that comment. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the water... The thing where you buy an elephant ear and a funnel cake and you throw a ball.
No, we have a separate Pride Festival thing with booze that is not...
With booths or booze?
No, there's booths. There's probably booze too, but there's booths.
Can I just tell you? It has nothing to do with elephant ears or funnel cakes or gays or roses or parades or elephants or like the whirly thing that spins you around and only rarely kills people. Every town, because this is right around because the Rose Festival, is it still going or is it done?
I don't know.
See, doesn't it seem like it just goes on forever?
It seems to just appear every year, and then it just never goes away for the longest time. And every time you turn around, there's some other event that's, like, blocking off half the street so you can't get where you're going.
And there's, like, 17 different parades that happen.
And that incredibly dangerous-looking Ferris wheel that's, like, about 3 feet from the freeway overpass.
Yeah.
And I can't believe every year that no one has gotten drunk and tried to jump from it, you know, onto the Ferris wheel or vice versa.
I wouldn't rule out that it's happened. I have the best idea for a carnival ride because, the thing about Ferris wheels and roller coasters is they're either truly terrifying to you, in which case you're not going to go on, or you're one of the, we've all been behind this guy. This is like the same guy that's always in front of me, like whenever I go to the haunted house or something or the Fright Town. You're always behind some dick who has to announce really loudly to everybody, but basically to his girlfriend, well, this isn't really scary. This isn't like the Cyclops coaster down in Sarasota. Now that's a roller coaster. I think that they ought to design a Ferris wheel or a roller coaster where like part of the gag is that as it rotates and turns over, just like a handful of bolts just falls out.
Yeah.
Or just like, but they'd
that
be
would
like
be scary.
They'd be staged bolts. Like they would be held there with like a magnet or something or just whatever. And then as it went and just tipped over, like just like a bunch of screws would just fall out and land at that guy's feet. You'd be able to smell him a mile away.
And you could have one fake carny down on the ground who goes, "Oh my God!
Oh my God! It's all of the humanity!" And then they could, and then they could have an ambulance pull up or something, or you could have a
fake fire truck, and all the firemen start just pouring out of the fire truck.
How about this? You get everybody bolted in, because there's the thing where the carny comes around and he checks, not very well, but he checks the little bolt, the bar seatbelt thing that goes in front of you. And he goes, "Okay, you folks all taken care of here? Oh, that's great." And then he goes over to start the ride. Just as he does it, you could just have him reeking of booze. Or maybe he stumbles and has to look real hard for the right button.
He could pretend to flub up, strapping you in at first, going, "Yeah, here we go. Oh wait, no, I almost did that wrong. That would have been bad."
Or maybe he could just be hosing some blood out of one of the seats as you arrive. It's just a sort of a goof, kind of a, "Oh, hey, hold on, you folks, I'll be done with this in a second. All right." I'm sorry. This is Legion of News on PDX.FM. Don Taylor.
A family escaped after their car rolled into the water off Sovie Island on Sunday. Investigators said the family of five was on an outing at the far end of Sovie Island past Steelman Road when their SUV became stuck. They started rocking the vehicle back and forth, and then it got traction and broke free, rolled into the water. The two adults and three children escaped, but their pet chihuahua was trapped inside the SUV that filled up with water. Lieutenant Damon Simmons of the Portland Fire and Rescue said conditions made it too dangerous to return to the SUV to save the dog.
And this was where? Where did this happen?
Sovie Island.
See, but again, nudism. I mean, I'm not saying they were there to be nude, but it's just a bad thing.
So you believe that nudism is somehow connected to the SUV tragedy that killed their chihuahua?
I'm not. This is really the only thing that came to me. Here's the thing. I was bluffing just now because I'm trying to get the chat thing up on my screen so I can speak with the people. And then that wasn't really able to work here the first time I tried it. And so what I was doing is half my brain was trying to get the chat server up, while the other half was thinking, say something pithy. No, she's finished. You can tell from her inflection. She's finishing a story. You've got to be glib. Where is your wit, man?
You're out of practice.
Yeah, I know. So I was like, part of me was on Meebo recon, and then the other part of me was trying to be amusing.
All those many, many run-throughs we did should have brought you back up to speed. But
something you'd like to say, Don?
No.
Do you
no.
have an issue you'd like to address?
Not really.
Take it outside if you want.
Yeah.
All right.
A truck was hit by a watermelon in a freak accident in Vancouver late Sunday night. The man was driving his pickup truck eastbound on Southeast 1st Street just before midnight when all of a sudden a watermelon came flying through the air and smashed into his windshield. The startled driver immediately pulled over, called 911. Police said he was treated for possible neck and back injuries. It appeared that the truck's windshield cracked but did not break open, protecting the driver from being hit in the face by the watermelon. No word on exactly where the watermelon came from. Investigators suspect it was somehow thrown from a vehicle traveling westbound on the same road.
I'm unclear. So he wasn't like he was going underneath an overpass or something. He was just going down the road, and then a watermelon
just flew at his windshield.
Just like that episode of Dexter, but less ahead than a watermelon.
Right.
Hey, let me ask you this. Okay. If I were to ask you what I'm doing wrong with the chat thing over here, would you have an answer for me?
Probably the fact that only one of us can be logged into it at a time, and I already am.
Oh, damn you. Damn you.
I could just shove my laptop over there and you could look at it.
No, that's fine. My needs aren't important. No, that's okay. No, I'll just imagine what people are saying. Is it something like, what a flawless execution of broadcasting wonder this is?
Well, there is a fellow named Hellbent Jess who is saying a lot of like really snotty things like, let us know how that glib pithy thing works out.
All right.
So we don't want to hear from him. I'm closing his window.
It's not
right
easy
there.
What I Go do ahead. Here, friend.
So.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A man was trapped in the basement by a broken furnace for 3 days, and the only hope for his survival was to cut off his own arm. Jonathan Metz, 31, of West Hartford, Connecticut, had been trapped in his basement for 2 days when he smelled rotting flesh and realized his only hope to stay alive was to amputate his left arm, which was trapped by his furnace. So he made a tourniquet just below his shoulder and sawed through 90% of his arm before he passed out. Luckily, neighbors realized they had not seen Metz for a few days, and they called the police, who were able to rescue him with the aid of firefighters. According to the West Hartford fire chief, rescuers ripped apart the furnace using heavy tools and completed his amputation. The arm could not be reattached because of infection.
I was just going to say, really, how, if he cut 90% of the way through his arm, how is it that it took firefighters and neighbors to get him out of there? I mean, it seems like if he had five more minutes, he would have gotten himself out of there. What was he doing on the furnace that he would... Here's my question. Why was he working on the furnace with a saw? Because this implies that he had like a bladed up, like a cutting thing handy.
Well, the saw may have been within reach.
Oh, it was sort of like he just had the all-purpose toolkit or something with him?
Also, if it took him, how long did he say it took? I don't know. I have no idea how long it took him to saw through 90% of his arm. But you figure that must have taken a while. He probably didn't have a very good saw.
Well, I mean... Probably. You know, these things are never really as durable as they're advertised on television. It's not like, it's not like when you're buying something from the knife guy at 4 a.m. on the, you know, whatever the hell that channel is. I saw the knife guy again the other day. You know the knife guy, the guy who sells the, you got 109 pieces of knife-related equipment here for just $98. The thing about cutting through your own arm is, A, I wonder if that is a thing that has happened... I mean, like once a day throughout human history, and we're only now privy to it because the internet brings us all together in one global community. Doesn't it seem like we have a story about every 36 hours of somebody somewhere having to cut through some delicate part of their body to escape from some sort of trap or peril?
Listener says on the chat box, by the way, he could have just waited for the neighbors to call and kept his arm. Fail.
I guess that's a good point. Well, maybe someday you'll be in the same situation, sir, and then you can lord your arm-cutting superiority over him.
He was actually trapped for, like, a couple of days. He was there for 3 days. He was drinking leaking water from the broken furnace to stay alive. I think there is that point that, you know, 3 days you start going, wow, maybe I should cut off my own arm.
Well, things can't get any worse for me. I wonder about the arm-cutting thing, though. I hate to – I'm not trying to be off-putting or horrible, but – I mean, what's in you? I keep going back to the whole thing of him having a saw. I mean, it's not like he had a radial saw, or like a skill saw, or a jigsaw, or something with him. I mean, he had. I mean, what kind of Don? Are you handy in any way?
Well, I have. When I was getting ready to come over here today, I was digging through a drawer to find some clips for my papers and such, and I have a little saw that's like a folding knife kind of a thing, and it's just a saw. It's like a 3 or 4 inch saw blade.
Hold on a second. You just keep talking.
And so he might have had one of those in his pocket, or he could have had, like, say, a Leatherman with a little saw blade on it.
A Leatherman doesn't have a saw blade.
I mean, that guy who hacked off his own leg a few years ago and crawled to his truck and drove it to a farm or whatever it was, he cut off his leg with a Swiss Army knife.
Is that true?
Yes.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hold on. I'm attempting to just 1 second here. And wait. Ooh, wait. And no, I'm not able to do this. All right. Well, okay. Never mind. I'll have to look into it then. The thing about the Leatherman is, I'm not trying to be horrible. I'm just wondering, you go through the epidermis, and then there's the fatty layer, and then there's your muscle, whatever. But see, what no one ever talks about is like how you cut through the bone. That's the thing they never. And I'm I know it's the lunch hour, and so I'm not trying to be.
That's probably the
awful.
10% he couldn't do, and that's when he passed out.
he's a quitter. I bet that's why it's. I bet that's why it's 90%.
Yeah.
But see, that never really occurred to me. I bet that's it. I bet that it's that. When they say cut through 90%, the 90% is everything but the bone. The bone is the remaining 10%. Okay. Now it makes a lot more sense now. I wasn't really able to put it together. Let's see if I can do this though. I'm gonna hold on a second. I don't know if there's any audio coming out of here.
I hear nothing.
All right. Well, that doesn't mean it's not working, Don.
No.
All right, let's see if this works. We're gonna try some exciting science here. All right. No, I was going to call Greg Nibbler. No, it's not working for me. All right.
Well, that's fine.
He's just on the other side of the door.
He's in the kitchen, which is like 12 feet from where we are. He's in the... Let me just say this about this setup where we are broadcasting from here today, from Legion of News headquarters. When we were at CBS, when we were doing the Rick Emerson show there, we always use a joke that someday we would be in a real studio somewhere. We'd be in a real facility. And by real facility, we just meant someplace that had an actual green room. Because we didn't really have a green room at CBS. We just had a kitchen, which I think we dubbed the Art Alexakis green room. But guests would come down and we'd be like, look, I'm sorry, it's CBS. They don't like to spend money. So you're going to have to sit in the kitchen here. And when we were kind of striking on our own, I thought, by God, this is it, man. You're going to have an actual green room. And we don't. We just have a kitchen again. So Greg Nibbler.
It's a much nicer kitchen.
It's a much nicer kitchen. And there's Wi-Fi there, which is more than I can say for CBS. We're literally, like, unless you were sitting on the lap of the engineer, there was no Wi-Fi to be had anywhere.
Do you know that, like, literally, from experience?
And Dawn, and it's too heavy a price to pay. I mean, there's no amount of tentacle porn worth surfing for that makes it. It's just there's no. So Greg is actually in the kitchen right now doing some stuff, and I was going to attempt to call him and ask him what kind of knife he would use, were he to have to cut through. You know what they ought to do? Okay, this is a great show that I would watch. They should do this on the Discovery Channel or like the Man versus. Thing, you know, with those shows where it's always a guy versus something else, or when something else attacks a thing, or when one noun verbs another noun, they ought to do some sort of a survival show. This is the best idea ever. Somebody write this down.
Oh, me?
Okay.
I have a pen.
Look, it never worked with it. It never worked with anybody else. Why should it work with you? No, just humor me. They ought to do some show that's on the...
We could record this in some way so that we could listen to it later and know what you said.
I'm picking up on your sass. They ought to do some survival-type show where they fit a guy with like a prosthetic arm. In other words, he would wear a vest. He'd have his right arm free, like his actual right arm. His left arm would be sort of tucked inside the vest, unusable, immobile. And he would have a sort of pseudo, like a prosthetic arm on his left side that was attached to the vest. In other words, he'd be simulating one arm, you know, and have one arm free. And then they would pin him beneath something. And then they would just leave him a variety of tools. And it would be a completely medically accurate prosthetic. And then it would, you know, then they would test the whole having to cut through your own arm to escape.
They could do that on MythBusters.
I don't know how they'd simulate the pain thing though. I guess it all falls apart there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a good idea.
Is that
in my
just
head.
One episode of the show, or would we just do this week after week, pin different people under things with fake limbs?
It's a bit of
and have them saw through them.
It's a bit of a fluxing project at the moment, Don. I haven't really nailed it down with any specificity. Hello, my name is Rick Emerson. You are listening to Legion of News on PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
Do we have our Florida sound?
No, because that's for a different radio program, Don.
All right. Well, I thought you might use it here.
Hey, hold on a second. That's fine.
It is a Florida story.
You know, just for the love of God, I'm only one man. Jesus. All right, fine.
Sugarloaf Key, Florida. A reported mummified body on an abandoned boat in the Florida Keys turned out to merely be a mannequin. Monroe County Sheriff's Office said a young couple spotted what they thought was a dead body in an abandoned boat. They said it appeared to be mummified. But when Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission sent a boat to take deputies to the scene, they just found a mannequin on the boat. No human remains. And see,
well, that's an unsatisfying story. Is there more?
No. I know. Why was there a mannequin in a boat? I want to know.
That's the thing about these stories is, especially from Florida, I think it's that they themselves, they are inured to the whole thing.
It's another mannequin in an abandoned boat.
Right. I mean, it's like if you live next to a waterfall, you just don't hear it after a while. If you live in Florida long enough, you no longer realize that you live in a crazy state. Mm. And so you don't realize, as a result of that, that there are people in the outside world who want to understand, the backstory here. Like, why is there a mannequin just floating along in a boat? And why would somebody in Florida immediately be able to spot a mummified corpse just like without any actual inspection?
Well, yeah. How do you assume it's mummified?
Yeah, I don't know. That seems like either A, they're just they're kind of making stuff up. They're leaping to the bottom of the page without adequate information. Or
now, it could have been, maybe it was a mannequin like wrapped up in a sheet. And so it made them think of mummies.
Maybe. I think that people in Florida just have a bit of a, what we would call a specialized skill set. All right, here's Don Taylor.
A wire-chewing rat is blamed for an estimated $1 million fire that gutted the Fifth Avenue post of the Veterans of Foreign Wars in Yakima, Washington. The rodent caught fire while gnawing through the electrical wiring of a jukebox, fled back to its nest inside an old piano where it ignited its nest of combustible material. Dwayne Dewey Ramaker, a member of Post 379, said, "We haven't had any problems with rodents, and I don't know if anybody had ever seen a rat running around in there before. It's just too bad that a rodent can cause that kind of damage."
I really disregarded everything that you just said except for the VFW thing. I didn't really hear anything after that. Because when you say VFW, I immediately picture that Tom Anderson guy from the Beavis and Butthead cartoons. And I wonder if the VFW... I wonder if that's a thing that the kids are down with, like if the guys who are veterans now who are under the age of like dead, if they come back and if they hang out at the VFW, the big selling point of which, as I understand it, was always that the beer was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
But I think that laws are such now that you can't be like giving the beer away there.
I don't know if they do because my mother was something of a barfly and had friends that were members of the VFW, and I remember going to VFW a couple of times just to sit there at the bar and drink with her and her old fogey friends.
How old would you have been?
19.
Yeah. I just knew inherently, just instinctively, I knew that you weren't of age.
And it's like, and they were all old guys from like World War II. And it was my understanding that it was very clubby and very, very cliquish. And they were just barely tolerant of like Vietnam War vets.
Right.
much less, you know, guys that have gone to like Afghanistan and stuff. It may have changed. I don't know. But I do know that there's an episode of Justified where, which is one of my favoriteest shows
with
ever,
Timothy,
by the way,
Oliphant.
With Timothy Oliphant. And he has to go get his dad out of the VFW. He's been sitting in there drinking all day. And they have this interior of the place. And it is so much nicer than either of the VFW halls I ever saw. I drank in one once, and I went to a wedding reception in one once, and they were both just big, you know, sort of concrete bunkers with like a bar jammed in one end.
Please tell me that the wedding reception was for your mother.
No, it wasn't.
My mother got married at an Eagles Lodge in Kennewick, and it was really, and sad to say, it was probably the nicest of her many weddings, of her three, I think, because it had a sort of, it had a sort of amusingly lower end kind of elan going on. But the thing about the VFW hall is the VFW hall, the Moose Lodge, the Elks Lodge, the Eagles Lodge, probably the Masons Lodge, and the Knights of Columbus Hall, they all have like one contractor that comes out to build them. And the contractor, all this guy is equipped with is like plywood and like that tar paper stuff that's not quite like sheetrock. It's sort of like, it's kind of like sheetrock if you were building a thing for your kid that only needed to last 2 or 3 hours. And bricks and dust, and that's it. Because the bulk of the money, I mean, the overwhelming majority of the money spent on these just goes into the bar. I mean, these are just, you've heard people describe cigarettes as just a glorified nicotine delivery system. Fraternal lodges are just a beer delivery system. That's it. Everything else is just to keep the bar dry.
Now, there's an Eagles Lodge in Milwaukee. I think it's the Eagles Lodge, one of the lodges, and it's huge. It's actually absolutely massive. And I was working for a newspaper, and I did a story on a show they were doing there where they had this guy who's the premier Tom Jones impersonator from Las Vegas, and he was headlining a show of impersonators. There's also a Buddy Holly guy and a Reba McEntire. And I did an interview with the Tom Jones guy, and he gave me free tickets to the show. And I was really surprised at how like enormous the inside of this lodge was. And it was set up for, like, you know, dining and dancing, and it had a really nice bar in one side, and it seated, like, several hundred people. It was huge.
The other great thing about going to any fraternal organization like this is you walk around inside, and they've all got exactly the same photo setup, which is a chronological series of photographs, starting with, you know, like Spencer B. Hinkleman III, who was the first president of that Eagles Lodge in 1812, all the way through like a guy in the 60s named like Cedric, where the colors are all sort of faded out. And then there'll be a guy now. But if you look at the progression of the photos of the presidents of Eagles Lodges or any fraternal lodge, you'll notice that as time goes on, the guys in the photographs get older and older and older. So, like, the mean age of the Eagles Lodge president for a long time was, like, 40. Now it's, like, 112.
Yeah.
Because there's just no one else.
And you have that whole middle section of them where they're all wearing the same style of glasses.
Exactly.
Those great JFK-era, you know, black-rimmed across the top.
They look like they ought to be wedged between Clint Howard and Ed Harris, you know, talking about, we've got to fix their air filtration system.
Listener in the chat box says, yeah, the VFW has really cheap drinks and shooting ranges. That's a good combination.
What do you mean that as a shooting? Hey, you know, I'm trying to find an excuse for people to call us. I wonder if I should throw out some sort of discussion topic about the VFW hall. Don Taylor, should I? I'm taking my life in my hands. Should I
give the phone number?
Should I give the phone number and encourage people to call us?
You explain to them that it's Skype and we can only take one call at a time.
That's what I'm saying.
Unless they're the lucky lottery winner who actually gets through first.
Well, no, but if you look at it this way, I mean, like at the last, you know, when we were doing the last show, when you were at 970, we only had 4 phone lines. So really, you know, 4 phone lines, 1 phone line. And of those 4 phone lines, Don, I was only going to talk to one person at a time. So really,
there you go. That's
is
all
it
you need.
That different, Don? Is it so different?
No, not at all. And plus, you don't have to worry about the whole, like, dealing with, like, someone like Richie Bristol answering the phone and, you know.
Yes.
Or not being there when.
I don't know. They just put me through. I thought I was supposed to get screened, but here I am just talking to you, Rick. Best show ever. I say this knowing that as soon as I give out the number, this is immediately just going to spiral out of control.
Do you want to do this today?
We should probably wait. We should probably do it in the next hour. We'll do it at the the Emerson Show. All right. You are listening to Legion of News on PDX.FM. If you are just now tuning in and wondering what to your wondering ears should appear, my name is Rick Emerson, and I'm here with Ms. Dawn Taylor. This is the inaugural broadcast of Legion of News. It is sharp world, sharp news for a world gone dull, I think was the that was the sort of slogan that we boiled it all down to. This is where we attempt to forcibly inject into your gray matter all stories about all things and all happenings that you need to know about as you face the daily struggle. It will air Monday through Friday from noon to 1 right here on PDX.FM. Coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show will begin over at rickemerson.com. Once again, at the news desk. I'm just going to play this again because I enjoy it. Once again at the news desk. Oh, wait. No. Well. There we go. Dawn Taylor.
Now, I do have some entertainment news.
Oh, damn it. Now, I thought we were...
I was trying to tell you about the entertainment news.
And then we're going to fix all this. Once again, at the news desk, Dawn Taylor.
It's finally official. Orlando Bloom and Miranda Carr are engaged. The couple, who began dating almost 3 years ago, have dodged multiple engagement rumors throughout their relationship. In November 2008, the model, 27, and the British actor, 33, shot down a report in the Australian media that they were getting married. 6 months later, the two kept fans guessing when Carr was spotted with a sparkler on her left ring finger, though reps at the time had no comment. When the two recently spent Thanksgiving together in Morocco, Bloom told reporters he and Carr were just enjoying their time together now. "He's a sweetheart. And that's all I'm going to say," Carr, who has talked about settling down and starting a family, told People magazine in February 2008.
This is going to be one of those things that highlights how out of touch I have become during my underemployed period, because I know who Orlando Bloom is because he played an elf. I don't know who's Miranda Carr.
She's a model.
Oh, well, way to color outside the lines, Orlando Bloom. Well done.
Yeah.
The thing about Orlando Bloom is he looks like... He sort of looks like a cross between Neil Patrick Harris and Henry Thomas of E.T. fame. Like, if you were to sort of merge them into one person and then kind of sharpen his nose with some sort of whittling device, that's exactly what Orlando Bloom looks like. Please now to list for me every good movie Orlando Bloom has been in since Lord of the Rings.
I got nothing.
Okay. All right, I'm just checking. Want to make sure it wasn't just me. Sometimes I like to have a little sort of external verification of my beliefs.
Yep, right. That's it.
Here's Dawn Taylor. Is this still entertainment news?
This is still entertainment news. Following his second alcohol-related arrest, actor Chris Klein has voluntarily checked himself into rehab.
Is he still an actor, really? Present tense?
It says actor. Although, you know, they still...
Does acting irresponsibly count?
They refer to him as the American Pie actor. So it's not like he's got a lot else going on.
You know, and I remember when we all thought it was going to be, what's his name, the Pie Humper, who got who got tagged with that. That he was just never going to be able to do anything ever again. But he was actually in, was it Jason Biggs? Is that the Pie Humper?
Yeah.
He was in the, was he not in a Woody Allen film?
Yes, he was.
He was in.
He was indeed.
What, he was in the Woody Allen film with
he was also
Christina Ricci.
He also did The Graduate on Broadway with Kathleen Turner.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, Kathleen Turner. I don't know. It's like that becomes a whole message thread in my head that immediately has expanded. And I don't even know if we have time to talk about Kathleen Turner. I will just say this. Did you, you quit watching Californication after the first season?
Yeah, I did.
I have such, I got to really rein myself in because I can just talk about that show. I feel like I have to at some point just buckle down and do a master's thesis on Californication, which is really just one of the most fascinating programs, both because of its own content, I mean, in and of itself as a program, and then also as an exercise in, you know, wouldn't say meta-ness, but I mean, what is it when something is meta, it has a state of what?
If something self-referentialism. Yeah.
But anyway, have you heard the Kathleen Turner? Did you ever see any of
I didn't see any of that.
Oh man. Okay, I gotta find that. Kathleen Turner on. I know that everybody kind of jokes about how she's sort of strangely androgynous, or she's got kind of a low husky voice, or whatever. But I mean, she's a guy. I mean, she's a full on Y chromosome. I don't know what is going on, or if there's some sort of, like, if we're seeing her at stage 2 of 5 and she's just saving up for the other 3, I don't know what is going on. If there's a lot of frequent trips to Helsinki for her, if she's trying to for a hockey team somewhere.
She did have some health issues. And I can't remember what it was, if she had rheumatoid arthritis or something like that, which I believe involves taking steroids and such.
I think it also involves injecting her with stem cells from a silverback gorilla, because she is like 7 feet tall. She looks like she could put a fist through a concrete divider. And when she talks, it's like this.
She sounds like Harvey Fierstein now.
It's unnerving. And so her character on Californication is this unbelievably oversexed book agent. And she's trying to, you know, she's always trying to seduce every man that she meets, always with incredibly crude phrases. And it's like you always hear that thing about marriage where you say, like, you know, whenever – no matter how hot a girl is, you see some girls or woman on the street, no matter how hot she is, you realize that somehow there's a guy who is sick of effing her. The thing about Kathleen Turner is sort of an object lesson in the other part of that, which is that everybody eventually does look like their mom. That's the thing. There's just no getting around it. And I've never seen the elder Turner, but I don't think I need to at this point. It's thoroughly unnerving.
She was cast as Chandler's dad post sex change, though.
That's
on Friends,
right?
Which was pretty awesome.
See, now I'll feel like a dick if it's because it's like, if it's a whole illness thing, if she's like, well, it's because I had cancer, you know, then I have nothing to say. So I'd like, if it is in fact because of cancer, I would like to not know that fact, because then I can continue to make jokes with impunity.
And by the way, after Lord of the Rings, Orlando Bloom was in Pirates of the Caribbean, the first movie of which was actually quite good.
No. I mean, it was okay. If it had been cut by about 35%, I think. But, all right, I'll grant you that one. All right, here's Don Taylor, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I don't know what to do.
That's a sound that indicates you have the next story not chosen.
Yeah. Harriet, thousands of would-be pirates gathered Sunday in Vallejo for the 4th annual Northern California Pirate Festival. The Free Two-Fade Festival, by the way, listen to that. The free two-day festival. We have a pirate festival here in Portland. It's $15
also,
to get in.
If it's free, exactly how is it that they're able to run that? If something is free, you start it for like an hour, maybe 2 hours. Then you expand to 2 days.
Well, later. I think it's sort of it's almost like one of them Renaissance fairs or something. It goes for 2 days, and it drew an estimated 40,000 people. So I think the amount of money they can get from like vendors to rent booth space and things like that can actually pay for, you know, the upkeep. Because it says it drew an estimated 40,000 people. 2,643 of them participated in an attempt to set the Guinness World Record for the world's largest gathering of pirates. Or should we say people dressed as pirates.
Yes.
They had to wear a red wristband, stand in place for 10 minutes, and be counted by the guy from the Guinness Book of World Records. The festival, it says, was something like a street fair, but with more cursing, cleavage, and weaponry. Pirates set off fake cannons and cracked real leather whips, and servers in food booths yelled at each other and accused people of they were going to get scurvy if they didn't leave tips, because okay, pirates are wacky.
What is it? We're about to, is it 12:53 here in the city?
It is, indeed.
Right. And before we end this inaugural hour of Legion of News, a couple things. First of all, we didn't really discuss this because there was so little to do and so much time before today's broadcast. We have an exciting feature that we're going to be unveiling. It has a terrible name. It's awful. I don't even want to call it a bit, because calling it a bit implies that there is some sort of catchy title for it, and we don't have that. We had this idea for a news segment in which we were just going to, you know, again, sort of jam more knowledge into a tiny, tiny slice of time and then stick it into your ears. And we sat here last night brainstorming names for it, and then it was the thing where the brainstorming session and if you work in any sort of like creative endeavor, you're titling something, and the brainstorming session is always much funnier because you're either tired or drunk or both, and by the end of it, you've dissolved yourself into fits of giggles trying to title the bit. The only title we were ever able to come up with is, I apologize in advance for this, is "You Are What You Tweet." Now, if you think "You Are What You Tweet" is a terrible title, and it is, let's have no illusions about that. Understand that previous entrants included in the tweet of the night:
tweet smell of success,
tweet of broken dreams, which is like, which is wrong in two different ways.
Heart tweet, it's a love tweet.
The agony of the tweet. These are, I mean, Really, this is our genius on parade right here. This is a microcosm of our creative process.
By the way, to tell you that Kathleen Turner does have a rare disease that affects her hormones.
Oh, you're lying. You're making that up, whoever you are, you bastard. You're just trying to make me feel bad. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. I will not be made to feel bad about this. I'm in denial. without further ado, I'm going to unveil the inaugural installment of Legion of News' You Are What You Tweet, in which we endeavor to give you the latest celebrity tweets so you may know what your favorite celebrities are up to. This is me stalling while I try to get the appropriate soundboard up here.
I'm not prepared for this.
Yeah, you don't have to be prepared. I'm prepared for both of us.
Oh, okay.
Rick Emerson is here to do the work of four hosts,
right.
Don Taylor. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Legion of News presents You Are What You Tweet. Time to surveil the lives, passions, and meditations of society's elite, the prettiest and fairest of them all. It's time to answer the burning question, what are celebrities twittering today? This is Legion of News, and you are what you tweet. Busta Rhymes says, if I haven't talked to you in 3 weeks, don't expect me to bail you out. Carson Daly says, thank you to the disabled, home and abroad. Let's all take a minute to recognize them for our freedom. Joel McHale says, in Seattle, first day of summer, high of 61. This tweet would be longer, but my finger are too cold. Shannon Tweed says, Madrid. The fat boys, really?
Yeah.
The fat boys say, me and my bitch. Joy Bahar says, read more Frank Rich. Hey, that timed out perfectly. It was almost as though we planned that.
That was nice.
All right. Fantastic. Excellent. All right. I don't have an actual clock in front of me that's accurate in any way, shape, matter, or form.
12:57 p.m. here in the fine city of Portland, Oregon.
Does that mean we're ending in a minute?
Are we ending at 12:58?
I believe it is a 58-minute broadcast hour that we have here.
Well, then, yes, we are ending in a minute.
God almighty. All right. Well, what with my relentless jawboxing, we got to almost nothing. Fantastic. Well done, Rick Emerson.
I went through an entire stack of news here. We discussed a lot of things.
Let's get to one more, Don Taylor.
Well,
you don't have one more,
do
you?
I do. I have a whole stack
here. You have nothing.
A Seattle police officer punched a teenage girl in the face last week.
Well done.
It was all caught on video. The video showed the unnamed officer trying to control the hands of a 19-year-old woman. When her 17-year-old friend appeared to try and break his grip, he punched her in the face. Seattle police spokesman Sean Whitcomb said that he hadn't seen the video, but the officer's report made it clear he was trying to gain control of a potentially explosive situation, which developed after the officer saw the two teenagers jaywalking.
You know, I could go on and on about it. I won't now because, A, it would be tedious. Not that that really stops me most of the time. And also because we are preparing to wrap up this inaugural installment of Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. We want to thank everybody for listening right here on PDX.FM. You can find out more about this program at legionofnews.com. So for those of you listening to this program, we will see you again tomorrow at noon. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show begins in mere minutes over at rickemerson.com. We'll be unveiling the phone number over at on the Rick Emerson Show today, and I'll try to get Greg Nibbler to call us from the kitchen. Won't that be exciting?
Woohoo!
We'll also be having a conversation with our good friend Seamus. We'll talk to the man Thomas Gill, who helped to put all this together, and do we have a penis watch coming up today?
We have a penis watch.
Fantastic. The Rick Emerson Show begins in a few minutes over at rickemerson.com. Until next time, thank you for listening to Legion of News. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. This is PDX.FM.
Legion of News on PDX.FM.